So, welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod,
episode 50. It's the big 50.
So, we have really big plans for the 50, didn't we? In fact, you know, I was going to hire Abbey Road Studios, you know, one of the most famous recording studios in the world. I was going to chauffeur drive, you know, David Attenborough across, you know, to do a little guest spot with us. I was going to get Ed Sheeran in. He was going to do a few little tracks in between, and it didn't kind of work out. You know, David's a bit busy. I think he might even been at Wimbledon. Ed's on his boat somewhere in the Caribbean, I think. So, you know, it all sort of came a bit crashing down. So, you know, you take over from here, because I'm sorry it's not the big razzmatazz thing.
It's fine. I was expecting, you know, a limo to pick me up.
Yeah.
But it's fine. Instead, what we're going to do...
Instead, we're sitting in the office garden, not Abbey Road Studios. No.
But, well, I think really we're just pretty chuffed to say that we've made it 50 episodes, because it was just a little idea. We'll go into the sort of the origins of the pod later. The little idea that we had, neither of us had ever done podcasting before, and somehow we're at halfway to 100 episodes. We've spoken about quite a few topics.
Yeah, it was funny, wasn't it? Because we set off doing the first one thinking we're not even sure we can do this, or if it's going to sound really rubbish. And we really enjoyed doing that first one, even though it was a bit raw. And then it sort of went on from there, and we found ourselves just loving doing it, whether anybody listened or not. Because yeah, obviously the early ones, you have to get it up on a podcasting hosting company and all of that stuff, and then try and do a little bit of social media around it, thinking no one's really going
to. Yeah, and to be fair, we haven't really pushed social media as much as we should have done, but
here we are on our 50th episode.
Yeah, and we thought for a while that we should do something. Obviously, not quite as big as what you implied, but we were going to try and do something big, but actually decided rather than that, let's just have a nice little chat. 50 episodes in, talk a little bit about why we are the Birdie Bug Pod. Well, why do I love bugs? Why am I the bug side of it? Why are you the bird side of it? How did the podcast come about? We'll also throw in the odd fact here and there. We've got a few quiz questions for each other. We're going to talk about some of the sort of key moments that we've had with our respective interests.
Yeah.
And then we might also do a little bit of a, you know, in an absolute dream world, Who would we interview? Who would we have as
a
guest?
Who we'd love to have as a guest.
And why we've sort of enjoyed the podcasting sort of process so much. So it's actually going to be a very chilled, relaxed, chatty episode. We'll probably be back to our normal habitats and species and positive news stuff in the next one. But if you're randomly tuning in and this is your first ever episode, it's quite a nice place to jump in, because you get to know the origin story, get to know us a little bit, the people behind the Birdie Bug Pod, and hopefully still also learn a little bit and listen to us fumble quiz questions, which tends to be the way.
I can't deny, you know, I had grand ideas of, you know, taking on Stephen Bartlett and Gary Lineker, of course, is
Joe Rogan
running, and Joe Rogan. Gary Lineker is running a very successful podcasting company now, and Joe Rogan, of course, I think is the most successful or most listened to podcast in the world, I believe.
Somehow.
And I read that Gary Lineker was earning £1.2 million a year out of his podcast. Well, we're nearly there.
Not far off.
We're not quite there, but, you know, we have big plans that we would get there. But, hey, you know, maybe we will. Maybe we won't.
So, I mean, doesn't help that we keep disappearing. Obviously, it's been a little while, but we went on holiday, went to Corfu.
Big family holiday, which was amazing.
Yeah. Which was just lovely to spend, you know, 9 days in the heat with nothing to think about other than, do I fancy a coffee or a beer?
Should I have a little go in the pool or, you know.
We got a little bit of photography in, saw some birds and bugs. And then I've also just been run ragged a little bit. I've been very busy with work, and I've had quite a few weekends with people visiting and stuff with the new house.
And I've had a bit of a distraction with Wimbledon.
Yeah.
I don't seem to have done anything for 2 weeks other than watch tennis, which has been great.
Yeah, so it's been a while, but hopefully, we always say this, but I think the second half of 2025 will be a bit quieter. So prepare yourself for some consistent podcasting.
Yeah, well, yeah, don't hold your breath, but we'll try.
We'll give it a go. When we start earning 1.2 million, we'll be even more consistent.
Yeah.
But in that case, if we haven't got any other catch-up, shall we go straight into our 50th episode?
Let's go straight in. And I think there was a little bit of miscommunication on the agenda that I sent you about this, because I put let's do a little bit about the origin of bugs and birds, and you interpreted that as let's do a little bit about the origin of the Birdie Bug Pod, why I was on birds while you're on bugs. What I really meant was, you know, I was going to do a little bit about the origin of birds, how they first came on the planet.
Yeah, we've
and
done that.
Thrived. And you've done nothing.
Well,
really.
No, not really. Just to clarify, I mean, obviously, the bulk or a lot of this will be talking about our interest in birds and bugs. When I said the origins, I actually have the little story of how the podcast was born.
Oh, okay. Let me do my. We all know that birds belong to a group of dinosaurs called theropods. I'm pretty sure people know that birds sort of
taxonomically are basically dinosaurs.
Are basically dinosaurs, and there's quite. I won't go into it, obviously, because you have got too much to do on yours. So,
I have a single line.
They evolved from fast running ground dwelling bipedal theropods into small winged flying birds. A lot of it happened after the mass extinction, and some of the birds that have been around, they think, since for about 160 million years, they've found fossil remains that they've been able to date back with creatures with wings and feathers.
Archaeopteryx being one.
Archaeopteryx being the absolute one that gave them the biggest amount of clues on the evolutionary journey of birds. And then after the mass extinction, lots of birds had actually survived. And, of course, things changed hugely with the mass extinction, and the planet changed, food resources changed.
Lots of niches opened.
Animals got smaller. Birds thrived because there was more food, less predators, et cetera, et cetera. So they think birds have been around pretty much for 160 million years on the planet. I found it fascinating that the closest ancestor to the Tyrannosaurus rex is the chicken.
Yep.
So they've proved that pretty much scientifically from
genomics, not genomics. The study of the genome.
That the chicken is the closest ancestor to the Tyrannosaurus rex.
Yeah, because I think that
which I thought was great.
The fact that I might be fact checked on this, so apologies if this is completely wrong, but I seem to remember a cool fact that I always found quite surprising is that, like, the dinosaurs like T-Rexes, etc., are more closely related to our modern-day birds than T-Rexes are related to things like crocodiles. Even though, obviously, people think of them as being the group of reptiles and birds, crocodiles are more, like, further away on the taxonomic tree, the birds, than T-Rexes are, which, again, obviously, because they are essentially the modern-day T-Rex.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's brilliant.
But people, you always think, oh, big dinosaur, big crocodile, they're probably quite close, and I always think that's quite an interesting fact.
That is a really interesting fact.
Of course, that is a fact. I'm pretty sure
you will get corrected if it's not correct. And then what I found fascinating was after that mass extinction, over the next 65 million years, birds became the most successful group of terrestrial vertebrates, spreading across the globe and becoming more species-rich than mammals, amphibians, and reptiles. They evolved and diversified into 10,000 different species. So it was obviously happened over quite a long period, but fascinating and very successful, and continue to be successful until we've wiped them out.
But also, without going down the
we're not going to go down that today, are we?
We do enough of that. I was going to say the they continue to obviously be they've always been a real source of sort of fascination for humankind. I mean, the old explorers, obviously, like the Tudor explorers, always like to bring in the Victorian age in particular, like to bring back pretty animals from jungles and things like that. So birds of paradise and all those sort of tropical
they did
birds
eat a lot of birds in Tudor time as well. And they were responsible for quite a few extinctions themselves because they did eat a lot of birds.
But I was saying, obviously, that age of sort of exploration was always really big on things like butterflies and bees, all those like pretty status symbol animals. And so they played a big part in sort of the introducing us to the wider world of, I say us as in the UK, the wider world of nature, because they were the ones that were brought back.
And of course, birds have been used for hawking and, you know, for thousands of years.
Messenger pigeons. We've done a whole episode on pigeons.
We have. We've done the whole thing on that. So, so that's kind of the, you know, the sort of evolutionary journey of birds in a very, very compressed way.
Well, if you want something compressed, I have a single sentence for mine.
You can't get much more compressed.
But insects first appeared on the land along with terrestrial plants around 480 million years ago.
Job done.
Sorted.
Right. Okay, should we...
not got anything else about
that. Should we crack on? Because so, we are in danger of waffling, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, in that case, I'll just give the little story of the of how I remember the podcast becoming a thing. So obviously, I think we probably spoke about a while ago, you started your A Bird in the Lens Instagram sort of during / after COVID, wasn't it? When you started to really focus your photography towards birds.
Yeah.
And you had that going for a little while, quite a while before I had mine. And I was actually out in Hampshire looking for snakes and insects in particular with, obviously, guest of the show, Josh, and future guest of the show, Sean. And I was sending you some of my photos because it had been so long since I'd been out to do sort of macro photography. Yeah. And I joked, oh, maybe I need a matching Instagram account. And it didn't take you very long to then create me a matching logo and a bug in the lens was formed. So then we already had our matching photography Instagram account.
We started a little branding there, didn't we?
Yeah. And then it was actually when you and I with Mum were out at Keyhaven, again, doing photography stuff. And you mentioned wanting to do something a little bit more as far as, you know, getting out there as the information about conservation and nature and the plight of nature, but also the hopeful things that are going on, because I think you were just starting to also do your voluntary work for the RSPB and the BTO, so you're entering that sort of your activist phase of doing spending your spare time
I started to put things up on my website about curlew action and yes about my rangering that I was doing
and so I think
plight of the curlew and all of those things
and you wanted to just have another avenue to talk about these things and so it was your idea. Little did you know that I've always loved the idea of doing a podcast, but couldn't work out actually what to talk about. And then again, it didn't actually take that long for us to, I think you came up with the name and then suddenly you bought some mics and we cracked on with it. But it all came about from a bit of photography, joking about matching Instagram accounts. We already had that branding. And then you sort of entering the world of talking and, you know, promoting conservation and the issues around nature. And then here we are, 50 episodes later.
And it's an absolute joy. It's something that we look forward to. And I mean, we've always sat and chatted, father and son. We've always been out photographing and being in nature and always been chatting about stuff. And it was just a sort of natural progression, really. Isn't it? We sit here and we chat away. And this is pretty much how we are. We chat away about all sorts of subjects. And we talk about, you know, we're both vegan and we talk about that quite a lot.
Especially the later... I mean, not even that much later, but sort of the first few episodes, I think you can hear us finding our way, whereas now we are far more relaxed. And so I think we do genuinely chat more like we just do normally. Yeah. But there we go. So you don't get any origins of insects, but you do get the origins of the podcast.
I will tell you, though, but when you hear this...
That noise is so jarring.
Do you know what that means? That means I'm going to throw you a little quiz question in.
Well, I don't have a button and I have quiz questions.
Okay. So when you hear that...
No, it's so jarring.
That is really good, isn't it? Do you not like it?
It's fine. It'll do.
Okay. I'm going to give you an insect question.
Oh, God. Okay.
Insects have structures known as simple eyes in addition to the compound eyes they use to see. But what do they use these simple eyes for? Now, this could be a multiple choice if you want.
Yeah, give me a multiple choice.
What do they use these simple eyes for? Is it A, detecting colours, B, magnifying images,
it's light and dark,
and C, detecting light?
Yeah.
I was going to give you a timer and everything.
It's light and dark.
I can't stop it. Hang on, it's only 10 seconds. Hold up. You've jumped the answer.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's light.
You are correct.
Yeah, so when you started that question, I was like, oh, God, this is going to be really complicated. And then as soon as you gave me the first one, I was like, that's fine.
Well, I know that you're going to know all of these. It's just a little bit of fun.
I was getting nervous, to be honest, because originally I thought you were going to say they have simple eyes or, and I could have said compound eyes. But
wait until I get to the bird ones. Actually, this was your mum's idea. They're sort of bird questions relating to me and maybe mum as well.
Oh, okay. That'd be embarrassing if I get those wrong. But when we learn at university...
I'm hoping it will be.
About the evolution of eyes. If you look at like the earliest part, all they really did was detect light, dark, nothing else. And so thank you. That was a nice, easy question.
That's all right.
All right, fine. Well, what do I get to do when I want to throw you a question? Because I've got.
Well, you could just nod and I'll hit the klaxon.
Okay. Well, we won't do one right now.
It's actually not a klaxon. It's called an air horn.
So sorry to everyone who's listening to that.
I'm not sure I've got anything else. Hang on, let me have a look. I've got...
Oh, no, that's a megaphone, sorry.
I really, one day, I think we need to swap seats and so I can ban you from these buttons.
Oh, actually, I've got a really good sound that I'm going to give you that I'm going to test you on. No, it's got to be the air horn.
Okay, fine. Right, before I throw you a surprise question, should we move on to a little bit about why I've got such an interest in bugs and why you've got such an interest in
where
in
it
birds?
Sort of started. Yeah.
Do you want to kick off? Do you want me to kick off?
Well, I'll kick off.
Okay.
I think you've already sort of mentioned that I got into bird photography and I've always been a passionate photographer, but I think we talked about this in a previous episode. But I was a landscape photographer and I loved moody skies and sunsets, and I'd go and sit on the beach at 5 a.m, watch the sun come up and try and get, you know, reflections in the water and all of that stuff. So I really loved all that. And then I think my passion started on the first time we got released. We were allowed out in lockdown, and you were allowed out in a group of six, if you remember. First time you're actually allowed out in a group, and it was your big brother's birthday.
Yeah, we went to the beach.
And we went to the beach, and we were sitting on the beach with a picnic and a drink, and this kestrel came and hovered over the beach. And I just happened to have my camera, not a particularly long lens, because I wasn't geared up for wildlife photography. And this kestrel, and I jumped up and I just stood underneath this kestrel who was not bothered by me at all. And it wasn't very high above me, so it was really close. And I stood under this kestrel that was trying to find something to eat. And it was a moment, it gave me goosebumps. And this, looking at this bird, and I just suddenly, and I was taking loads and loads of pictures. And when I got back, looked at the pictures, and that sort of set me off. And then I got totally obsessed, but I was going out every day, walking across the fields, realizing that every sort of common day birds, everyday birds that I hadn't really taken any notice of. I got really excited about taking a picture of a greenfinch in a hedge, and you know, they're so commonplace, but I just remember that feeling every time I saw a bird I hadn't photographed. So I got really obsessed, and spent a lot of time walking down rivers, and it was that part as well that I realized the joy of being out in the countryside, walking down a river, sitting on the edge of a lake or a pond. Or...
Yeah, because I am friends with you on the Garmin app. I could always see like middle of the work day. So that's been out for like two and a half hours.
That's when I was working full time, and because I worked for myself, I would get to lunchtime and I think, I'll just go for a little walk. And I'd say to your mum, just going to go for a walk for an hour. And 3 hours later, I'd be coming back going, oh, yeah, that was a bit longer. But I got so into it. And that's how my passion for birds and bird photography and being in nature. And then, of course, the more I started to learn about the birds I was photographing, the more I realised so many of them were in decline. So I then started to get interested in that. And the big thing for me was taking the step to go volunteering with the RSPB, which has completely changed my perception on the importance of those habitats and those salt marshes and the wetland areas, and I absolutely love it. People are incredible that you work with. Most of them are volunteers giving up their time. And I felt like also, you know, I was trying to give something back, a little something back, and that's why I love it so much. I feel like however small, I'm making a little difference because I'm out there on the Pagham Nature Reserve talking to people, educating them about why their dog can't go blasting across that salt marsh because of the ground nesting birds and how important it is to protect them. And so I feel like it's important.
Yeah,
and
I think I've said before, it's been really fun to watch you go from someone who has always had an interest in wildlife, always looked at things like the ducks, and obviously you've always been a big gardener and things like that, into the wildlife photography, into a volunteer, into a citizen scientist. And so it's been fun to watch the evolution of somebody with sort of a general interest, I like doing a bit of photography, to someone, I really like bird photography, to someone who then gives up a lot of their time to go and do citizen science bird counts and rangering.
I'm now doing wetland bird counts for the BTO. I'm doing a breeding bird survey for the RSPB through the summer, going and counting birds and nests and what have you. And I love it.
It's been really cool to watch.
Yeah. So that's where my passion, and that's why it's birds for me.
Yeah. Well, say bugs is a big group. Well, I guess if you take it literally, obviously, I've always somebody who's been quite particular about the use of the word bugs. And when it came to the Instagram yeah. and thing, I've decided to completely throw that to the wind because it should refer to quite a specific group of insects, whereas we're using it for insects, spiders, and the lot. But you know, from a young age, I always loved animals and wildlife. It was normally big cats when I was a yes. proper kid.
Yeah.
And then it was actually a trip to Marwell Zoo that started my love for invertebrates because we saw one of the zookeepers handle a Chilean rose tarantula in front of us.
Yes.
And part of it, I was just fascinated by this massive spider. It also prompted me to buy my first big bug book. And then I think it was just the sheer sort of diversity of them, and obviously you guys, you and mum being gardeners, always finding me spiders and creepy crawlies and stuff, and it was the fact that it was almost like a full safari just in your garden, and there was such a wide range of animals and all those things that you used to see on David Attenborough documentaries of predators and prey and all that sort of stuff. It was all that but on a smaller
yeah,
scale
yeah, yeah.
and you could just look under a hedge and have all of that, and so I found that particularly interesting. Obviously, I decided to go on and do zoology with herpetology, which I thought obviously reptiles and amphibians. And for a while, it was a running joke about what my specialty would be, whether it was always another ology. And I've always loved the reptile side of things. I tend to like anything with a bit of venom, and I like the venomous animals and the poisonous things.
Things that can kill yeah. things.
Always exciting. But at university, I mean, spiders were always my main interest. The first thing I did after you dropped me off was go to the library and get a book on spiders. But the other pivotal thing was joining the Entomology Society, which obviously I then went on to run with Sean. But it was being surrounded by a group of what then became very close friends who are just so much more knowledgeable than I was. So the people who ran it, you've got Sean, George, Josh, and quite a few others as well, who their knowledge of yeah. the invertebrate yeah. world was, and their enthusiasm for it. You know, when lots of people, we did some social things as well, but there were evenings where we'd go down to the like botanical gardens at night with torches to go and find spiders and ID them all. And it sort of just absolutely fueled that interest because they sort of introduced me to the more sciencey side yeah. of insects.
And you did an amazing trip to California. Was it California?
Arizona, yeah.
That's right, where you were going out at night finding scorpions.
Yeah, and I've got some of those listed down, some of like the key moments. But throughout like my zoology degree and time sort of studying the, you know, the evolution and animal behavior stuff, it was just the sheer diversity. You talk about 10,000 birds, we've got, you know, 50,000 species of spider.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just the spider. We've got 350,000 species of beetle.
Don't they make up 75% of all the animals on the planet or something?
Yeah, even within, you know, just the spiders, it was things like watching a David Attenborough documentary of the boa spider that whips a sticky bit of web at the end of the lasso, and that web has got the pheromones to attract certain moths, and it just absolutely yeah. blew me away. And then when I managed to combine that, because I think growing up, photography-wise, I was more birds. It was ducks and
yeah,
garden
when I remember
birds.
Taking you when you were about seven yeah. and putting this Nikon FM2
yeah, exactly.
in your hand. And
you can listen to our episode yeah. about our passion yeah. for photography. But when I started to combine macro photography with my sort of sciencey interest in insects, it sort of just opened up that whole yeah. world of incredible eyes
and
faces.
And it is incredible to get that close-up yeah, view, because it's a view that you never see by the naked eye. So to see the close-up face of a dragonfly
yeah,
or,
exactly.
you know, or a moth,
and
for example.
Stunning.
And they're absolutely incredible.
And
so
often overlooked and underappreciated. And I just found them fascinating. And then from a photographic point of view, apart from the fact that obviously in the UK it's relatively season-dependent, as in I have a lot to do in summer and not much to do at winter, it was just the idea that you can find so many species and things to photograph in a single bush. Just there's so much yeah. there that it just ended up being a real rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier for me to ID birds than it is for you to ID some random fly you've seen yeah. in Corfu or something.
But then,
or
yeah, you know. I went through phases, you know, at uni we went and did same group of friends, went to Liverpool Natural History Museum and did a specific microscopic course on how to identify money spiders and all those sorts of real intricate techniques and stuff. I just found fascinating. I had lots of friends who pinned flies, and I had one particular friend whose ability to identify ants was just phenomenal, and I didn't even know we had that many different species of ant. And so every little group of insects and spiders, so they all had, I always had a friend with a particular niche that they were interested in, and it was just
I think also for both of us, actually, we had to learn a completely new set of skills. For me to photograph birds, you know, it's very different to doing setting up a camera on a tripod and photographing across the beach to trying to capture a bird in flight that's suddenly going, you know, in front of some foliage, yeah. or trying to catch that moment of a egret catching a fish in the river or whatever it may be. You had to learn a whole new set of skills. And of course, I loved that as well. I got so into the photographic side and learning about the techniques to track a bird at, like a swallow that's going at 60 miles an hour or whatever, and get a pin sharp, you know, nice detailed picture. And you were the same for you for learning.
Very different.
The learning curve for you particularly to get a good macro shot.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously changed quite a lot not that long ago, sort of this time last year when I got a big diffuser and flash, yeah. and I got a whole new thing to play around with. I also realised that the one thing I forgot to mention is, I think during, we talk obviously a lot about conservation and environmental issues and things like that, with insects and invertebrates always being so close to the base of an ecosystem, just their general importance to the natural world, humanity, for the crops and everything. Again, I found that interesting from a conservation point. You always see, and not obviously to dismiss any efforts, but obviously quite, it's easier to get people invested in saving the pandas and the tigers because they're charismatic. They're what's called charismatic megafauna. They're big, interesting animals. When really what you need to do is save the habitats and the insects, and them being so crucially important and yet so often harder to get people interested in them. It's why I liked going and, you know, when Mum was working as a teacher, I did a couple of talks at the school to kids about spiders and how cool they are. And I'd take tarantulas in and to a bunch of very young kids and be like, they're not anything to be scared of. These are incredible animals. Yeah. And I like to try and to make people have a little bit more love for the animals that are perhaps sometimes not as easy to love.
Well, we've talked about that a lot in previous episodes. And from my perspective, I talked about the realisation of the rapid decline on all sorts of birds that we would normally, you know, 30, 40 years ago would have been really abundant, garden birds and birds out in the field. And one of the biggest reasons for that is a decline in invertebrates. So,
and
all of the reasons for that we've talked about many times, which we won't cover.
Well,
here,
if you want our last episode before this one was called The Importance of Invertebrates.
You can understand the significance. But I think again, you touched on it in your chat there, is the just sheer diversity and numbers of invertebrates.
And there's loads still left to be found. Obviously, typically the fact is that beetles are the most speciose group of animals at 350,000-odd. But there are scientists who reckon actually there's probably more flies than there are beetles. But beetles have had more interest because they're bigger and quite often prettier. Yeah. And again, during that sort of Victorian age of exploration and natural history, beetles and butterflies got most of the interest because you could put them in a very pretty display.
Yeah, I mean, we saw swallowtails in Corfu and they were absolutely stunning, weren't they?
Whereas things like flies were perhaps overlooked. So there are some estimates that would put flies at even more. So there's still thousands potentially of species yet to be discovered.
Which is also an exciting thing, isn't it?
Hit that klaxon. I'll go for a quiz for you. It might just be my generation, but we've grown up with that sound in so many YouTube videos. And Twitch streams.
I'm not sure how that's going to come out on the edit, so I might have to tone it down.
It's a particular internet sound that's just played. It's normally hit like that, and it just triggers an internet PTSD. Do you know what? I'm going to throw you a bird question because you threw me. This is a two-parter.
Okay.
One's not multiple choice.
Okay.
But what is the UK's loudest bird?
Oh, that's a really good question. The UK's loudest
bird. Just to clarify, not songbird, bird in general.
I know the world's loudest bird because it's a question I'm going to give to you a bit later on.
Oh, God, I don't know the answer to that. Quick Google. It's a bird, I'll give you a hint, it's a bird that you really want to see but haven't yet
seen.
Oh, it's
a booming bittern.
It's a booming bittern.
Of course it is, it's a booming bittern.
They are the UK's loudest
bird. Yes, of
course
it is. They've got an incredible sound, booming bittern.
And so the second part of this question is a multiple choice. So on a still day with no wind, how far away can a bittern's boom be heard? 1 mile, 2 miles or 3 miles?
Oh, I would have said three.
It is three miles, yeah.
It's an incredible noise.
Like 100 odd decibels.
Which I've yet to witness. Funnily enough, I will tell you, that was one of the questions that I was going to give to you. Hang on.
Oh,
I have four birds in particular that I really want to see and photograph, but haven't done yet. Can you name any of them? Obviously, bittern. The bittern was one.
Golden eagle?
Golden eagle is another.
A chough?
No.
Ah.
Come on, there's one that's in the New Forest that...
Oh, goshawk.
Goshawk, which I desperately want to see.
There's another one you've got down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, there's another one that keeps... you may not know this, but it keeps haunting me because they have actually been seen in the reed beds at Pagham.
Bearded tip.
A bearded tip was the other one. Yeah, so...
Josh actually took me to a patch that was supposed to have bearded tips and we did not manage to see
honestly,
one.
I was rangering in the spring and every time I turned up, there'd be a group of photographers with scopes and I'd do my chatty thing with them. Hi, guys, what you seen? Oh, you've just had six bearded tits. Oh, really? Where have they gone now? They've gone right down deep into the reed bed. Right, you won't see them now. Great. And it would happen so often and I've yet to see them.
I was going to say, until you said reed beds, I was going to say cuckoo and then remembered you had actually got a photo of that because they haunted you for a while,
They haunted me for a while. And my cuckoo, Wilfred's now back in Africa.
Oh, is he? That's good.
He's gone from Suffolk. He's right down in the Congo.
Busy,
he's gone across. He went across to Portugal. Spent a few days in Portugal. They are incredible, and now he's down deep into the middle of Africa.
So I still think when he comes back, we should try and go and find him.
Yeah, well, I loved Wilfred because for those who don't know, I sponsored a cuckoo for the BTO, and they do these incredible journeys. And they do live tracking on the BTO, and there's about 15 cuckoos that you can track and see the incredible journeys that they all make. And they have the little competition that goes on. Who's often running first and who's got back first from the Congo when they've come over here for the spring to breed. And now they've all gone again and they're all off in different directions. And it's absolutely amazing. And my Wilfred, my
was
lad.
Was first back, wasn't he?
My lad was first back. Not only did he go the furthest into Africa, he was the first back.
He's a powerful cuckoo.
He's a good lad, yeah, Wilfred. He takes some stopping. Anyway, sorry,
it was always going to be a chatty episode. The next bit on the agenda that I had down was some key moments that we've each had with birds or bugs that have sort of not necessarily kept the interest alive, but played a role in our passion.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I mentioned the Kestrel, which is
mentioned Marwell Zoo, which was obviously one that really sparked it.
I think the first time I have a moment, and I was with your mum really early in the morning, it's this beautiful mill pond in Arundel, which is quite near the wetland centre. And it was quite early on in my photography obsession and I hadn't seen a kingfisher and we were sitting at this mill pond, beautiful little mill pond, flask of coffee, 6 o'clock in the morning, best time of day. Yeah, best early morning, best time of day. And we were sitting there just, watching the wildlife and this kingfisher came boring down the little river that led into the mill pond and settled on the foliage on the wall on the other side, and I got this picture, and it wasn't a great picture, but I just remember the excitement. So all these moments were just moments of pure excitement to see a bird that I've wanted to see, and then to try. I was just trying to get it in focus, and I didn't really have some proper good gear like I've got now, so I had to work really hard to get this kingfisher, which was right on the other side of this mill pond in focus, and it was just like a little dot over there. But I just remember being so excited about that, and that was one of those key moments that really thought, do you know what, this is what I want to do. I love this so much. The challenge as well of trying to get that picture, even when you've seen the bird, but the challenge of trying to get that picture is just, I just love it. It gives me goosebumps every time, and that was a goosebump moment for me.
Yeah, and I mean, now you've got so many photos of kingfishers.
Yes, I've got a lot now, yeah.
I know, because I steal a lot of them.
Yeah,
I've got quite a lot of mine come from my trip to Arizona because it was obviously growing up with lots of documentaries from David Attenborough and people like Steve Batchel and whatnot, and like I say, always they especially things like Deadly 60, for example, are the reasons why I had such
that was so good though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's one of the reasons why I had such love for, the venomous animals and things like that. And so I'd grown up watching them, but never really seeing them. So being out there and seeing like my first scorpion in the dark with a black light, I wonder how easy this really is. And you just see this bright glowing thing. So that's a scorpion. It's just seeing them all dotted about with your torch.
We all find our ways of having really fun times. And I must admit, when you told me, we went out at night with torches to find
rattlesnakes and
highly
scorpions
venomous and scorpions. And I was thinking, this got to be better.
No, it was great.
So it was that
whole trip, you know, the first time finding scorpions at night with a ultraviolet light, first big wild tarantula walking around, Josh and I catching a big scolopendra, which was a big, big centipede, which we actually had in Tupperware between our two beds so we could try and photograph it the next morning. He had a bit of a close call with one of them.
Yeah, they're quite brutal, aren't they?
Rapid as well. Yeah. And
they give you a really bad bite, won't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, it hit his hand.
Are they venomous?
Yeah, yeah. And weirdly...
What would that do to a... human, it would just put you in hospital.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact.
It's not going to kill you, but it's going to make you pretty
and really painful.
Yeah.
The Scolopendra heros, which was the big chunky one, actually whipped around because Josh had it in tongs and it whipped around and hit his thumb and didn't catch him. Interestingly, you think it's a bite because it's administered near the front of the body, but it's actually a pair of modified legs rather than part of the mouth. So it is technically a sting. Although I like to think of it as a venomous pinch because it's not really a stinger, but it's not part of the mouth. They're called forcipules, and I think it's the only invertebrate with a modified pair of legs that is a.
And how big do they actually get?
Huge,
they're quite big,
like
aren't
30
they?
Odd centimeters. Wow. This was chunky.
Frightened the life out of you. Didn't one of your mates lose one in his house?
Yeah. No, that wasn't. Oh yeah, that was Josh actually.
Lost it in his house and never told his mum and dad.
Yeah, I think I can't remember whether he told them or not, but he did lose one. Yeah.
Did they ever find it?
Don't think so. But
honestly,
yeah, that again was just growing up watching these things on screen. And obviously, I'm focusing very much on the insects here because it's relevant to the title of the podcast or the name of the podcast. But I will always say, as much as I love macro photography and insects, there is nothing quite as exciting for me as finding a snake. And I think because growing up, you know, adders aren't that common. So going out somewhere where driving along the road, there's Western Diamondback rattlesnakes and we found like the sidewinders and lots of non-venomous snakes as well. But just seeing...
You get vipers and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it was just... Yeah, it was such an exciting thing to finally be out in a desert full of deadly animals.
Yeah. You'd probably really enjoy going to Australia as
well,
wouldn't
you? I'd
love
to go to Australia.
That's full of some pretty deadly animals.
Yeah, they've all the best animals.
Yeah.
All the ones that can eat you.
Yeah, so that was a real that was a real moment. My next one, really, your mum and I were desperately wanting to see a dartford
warbler. Yeah, I knew this one would be in there.
And every time we went to places where, you know, they've been seen or whatever, I didn't even see them. I couldn't even hear them, and I can identify a Dartford warbler now quite easily, but you'd see them and you'd hear them but never see them, and I just couldn't get a picture, and it was so frustrating. And this went on over 2 years. It took me 2 years to get a picture of a Dartford warbler because they're often in heather and scrub and gorse and they'd be deep in that foliage.
I still think when you see a Dartford warbler, it's almost a surprise that they've remained so hidden because they're quite striking birds.
They're quite striking. And actually, on my Instagram feed, and what was really annoying was, you know, at the season when Dartford warblers are around, so many people were posting pictures of, oh, this Dartford warbler popped up on this bit of gorse and just stared at me. And I got this great picture and it was just one of those things that haunted me. And then I knew that they were up on RSPB Farnham Common, and we went up there again quite early one morning, and fortunately bumped into one of the RSPB rangers who just was being polite, and so I said, "Oh, have you come? You know, come seeing things specifically?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm desperate to see and photograph a Dartford warbler." She said, "Right, I'll give you a little tip," and she told us of this little spot. They've been seen there all week anyway. We'd been there about 20 minutes sitting in amongst all of this heather, and I could hear them, and one of them just did that. It just popped up and sat on the top of this gorse. And it was one of those moments, no word of a lie, my hands were shaking so much. It's a good job I had image stabilization in my camera, because that's how it got to me. That's how I felt about that moment. It was so exciting. I was saying to myself, don't miss a shot. Don't miss the shot. And fortunately, this little bird bobbed around and I got some great shots. But we were so excited. Your mum and I were just jumping up and down with excitement. That's how the emotion got to us, you know. And it was wonderful. It was an absolutely wonderful moment of something that you've been trying to see for so long and get a shot. And there it was.
Yeah, that is lovely.
And it's, you know, just a... you know, a simple little brown bird with a funky top of his
head.
I've
had, you know, I had the same going out looking for like pearl-bordered fritillary butterflies, and never did manage to see a tube web spider, a purse web spider.
And I think it's also quite difficult. You know, people must think, some people will say, just a bird, what's a big deal? But it was, that's how it got to me.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely moment. And it's one that Mum and I, a memory that Mum and I will, you know, will never forget, that Dartford Warbler moment. And now I've seen quite a few.
Yeah, now you can be the ranger giving people tips to go and see
things. And there's plenty on, I've seen them in photographs from recently, actually on the Medbury site at RSPB Medbury, and which is just on the other side of the Pagham Nature Reserve. So, yeah, I'm now, and in fact, on my breeding bird survey, I was counting them the other day. So it's funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Once you've seen them once and then suddenly they all appear. Well, yeah,
I mean, I think we've said before that, and I've just said how much I love finding a snake. Adders have always been something I've not really found a lot of. And then, you know, I went out one day with Josh and we saw something like 24 in a day. And so you just turn up another bit. It's, oh, there's another three adders under there. And suddenly it's just, oh, it's
normal.
You
should go out with our friend Ruben, who we had guesting on here. And he's been posting some lovely adder pictures that he's been out surveying recently. So, but you understand.
Yeah,
I know you understand that excitement of seeing, you know, a wild animal.
I've very rarely gone out with a specific animal in mind to see, but I've quite often been with people who really want to see something specific, especially because a few of my sort of entomology friends are from the northern part of the country, and so they don't get a lot of the southern insects. And so whenever they visit, they've got like a little list of, I want to see these before we leave. And
Was it Sean who was desperately trying to see a Dartford Warbler?
Yeah, he wanted to see a Dartford.
And you were down in the New Forest while I was at RSP, and I was actually posting pictures of the Dartford Warbler.
He has seen one since, but on that day, Josh, Sean and I were sat in the car in the rain, and Sean, we were like, should we call it day? He's like, just give me a few more minutes, just hoping it might be. Yeah. That was not a successful.
And I think the next day I posted this picture up.
Yeah, poor lad.
But
we tried. We saw a lot of other things.
Yeah.
We, you know, Josh and I have been out specifically to see things like purple emperor butterflies, and we bumped into a group of people who were all wearing purple emperor butterfly t-shirts and a few of them actually knew Josh because of he was involved in like naturey tours, but we were out there looking, we just went around the corner, there's a whole group of people in purple emperor butterfly t-shirts. They're probably around here then, aren't they? So you get these little, it's amazing how, again, just a little, well, that's not that little, but a butterfly can capture so many people's interest and in passion to the point where they're all out there merched up trying to spot this butterfly at the top of the trees.
I see it with the birds.
Yeah, lots of twitches, aren't there?
Lots of twitches that turn up. At Pagham, we've had things like purple herons turn up, which are quite unusual sighting. And we had this long-eared owl, three long-eared owls that turned up that caused a huge stir. And people were, you know, standing there all day with scopes looking at this beautiful,
I will say,
long-eared owl.
They're getting a lot of mentions because this was another Sean and Josh day. I feel like I go out looking for animals most when Sean visits because we all meet up.
Yeah.
But this is a bird-related one. I was particularly excited to see the short-eared owls at the...
Oh, was it Farlington Marshes?
Yeah, that's the one. Because I've never seen, apart from, you know, a glimpse of like a barn owl flying over when you're driving early at night, and maybe a tawny owl when I was camping. But I've never really just seen, like, in the day, a wild owl just on a tree and flying around. So for me, that again was particularly exciting because I've just not seen that before.
Yeah,
so
it's those moments that just they give you goosebumps and you just think, wow.
The other insect one for me, which is less of like give you goosebumps and more of just like a, just felt a bit surreal, was going insect hunting with Ross Piper, who's another sort of presenter. He also went to Bangor University and he came and gave a talk at the Entomology Society with us. And then we went out for a pint, or quite a few pints with him. He bought us quite a few pints. And then we woke up feeling, well, we're all right, but a little bit rough then the next day, and went to Aberfalls with, and again, sort of a bit drizzly, North Wales stuff, but his... From someone who's been in that world for so long, I'd had his book and stuff like that, to just be out there with somebody whose, again, knowledge was so insane.
Mm.
And again, the absolute passion for it. Doesn't matter the weather, the fact that we'd had a few drinks, all he wanted to do was be out there and look for animals. So seeing somebody from TV, book I had, listening to him have a talk, suddenly find myself in a bar drinking with him, and then again going out looking for insects with this just absolute level of knowledge of the insect world was just, again, inspiring.
And don't you find that I have found, and I mentioned it earlier, that all the people that I've come into contact with, whether it's BTO surveys, whether it's RSPB, that what you just said there, they've all got such a passion, not only for, you know, seeing the wildlife and protecting the wildlife, but talking about it, trying to protect the habitat, yeah, trying to educate people. And they're just wonderful people. Yeah. Absolutely. They always
leave you, I feel, like, yeah, with even more interest, because, of, again, it sort of rubs off on you a little,
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, definitely. And when I did my first breeding bird survey, I think, again, I mentioned this in a catch-up in the previous episode, and I went out with the main warden at RSPB Pagham, and he took me out for the first time to do the first one. And honestly, his knowledge of bird calls was just off the scale. He was picking up everything, and I've got sort of Merlin app on my phone going, oh, yeah, that is a black cap calling over there. And he was just picking up everything, yeah, and his knowledge was just incredible.
Yeah.
And it makes you realise you've got so much to learn, and you never stop learning.
No, I've always found my problem with insects is that, and I've been quite lapsed with it sort of recently, but when I was really, really good at spider identification, I was pretty rubbish at the rest. And then I went through a little phase of, you know, I really want to know my flies. And so I started, and then suddenly I'd forgot all my spiders. Yeah. And so each time I've like delved into one of them, the other one disappears. And there was a small period of time when my bird calls were quite good, but that's gone now.
Yeah.
Because I kept sort of hopping between them and never really.
I think you have to keep, you have to definitely have to keep it up, because my bird calls have got, IDing has got much better since I've been doing this breeding bird survey.
Yeah, it's just habit, isn't it?
And, oh yes, I've used Merlin app a few times, but then I've realised that, yeah, now that is a yellowhammer calling over there, and we've got a meadowpipit over there, and so I've got a lot better at it. But you have to keep on it, and it's so hard because those calls still vary. They vary at mating time, they vary at courting time. Juveniles make different calls and different sounds, and so it's not an exact science. It's
I'll be honest, my foray into hoverflies was very short-lived. I bought the book, whereas how many of them are black and yellow, I was like, I haven't got time for this. There's just so many of them.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is you do need time.
Right, I feel like we're chatting lots. Should we do another couple of quiz questions before we move on to
sorry, I pressed the wrong button. That was actually shrimps eating on a coral reef.
I quite like that.
That was a good one. Do you want it again?
No, it's fine. It's, well, actually, it's nice on the bloody air horn.
That is actually sound of shrimps on a coral reef.
That's quite a good sound.
Right, I'm going to give you a quiz question.
All right.
I won't give you a quiz question. I'm going to tell you this is the loudest. I found this hilarious. This is the loudest bird in the world. It's called the white bellbird. And it's got an ear-splitting sound, something like the two-tone horn of a fast train approaching a station. Listen to this. Wait for it.
God, that is.
Hang on. You have to stay with it, because it goes a little bit. Hang on. That's one replying.
I'm on the edge of my seat. God, that is.
125 decibels. It's been
not a nice sound.
No, it's not a nice sound at all. So it wasn't a quiz question. It was just a bit of fun.
Okay, well, I'm going to throw you a quiz question. Stop it. I will make you cut that out, because...
I'm not cutting any of it.
No, cut that out, because as somebody who listens to a lot of podcasts, it would make me turn it off. You're cutting that out. That's just awful.
All right. I'll cut that out.
Quiz question for you, sir.
Go on, then.
Can you remember the speed... I'll make you this multiple choice. The speed of my Team GB running insect, the green tiger beetle. So this is a callback to our episode where we put together an Olympic team of animals. You brought birds and I brought insects. And for my runner, I brought the green tiger beetle. So it can either run at 0.2 metres per second, 0.3 metres per second, 0.4 metres per second, or 0.5 metres per second. It's a very hard thing to remember. I just thought it'd be fun to
I think in. It's 0.3.
It's 0.5 metres per second, which if you make that as a human equivalent, it's 112 miles per hour.
Wow.
But that's why they were my Team GB runner. That's actually one of my favourite episodes. So if you want to, back when we, obviously we're all into Wimbledon at the moment, but when we were really hooked on the Olympics, we put together our Team GB Olympic team. By taking UK wildlife and those that excel at certain sports to try and create our team. And I had such good fun trying to put that together. I absolutely loved that episode.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So
All right, you actually find this is the last appearance of me on the Birdie Bob Pod until that gets rid of that damn noise.
I'll edit them out, honestly. Will I? Maybe not. What bird at our favourite wetland centre in Arundel has a 3.2-metre wingspan? 3.2-metre wingspan.
I'm going to say 2 metres wetland bird, an egret or a heron maybe? I feel like that's too big for even them.
Unless, it's a big wingspan.
Yeah, unless you're talking about the white-tailed eagles that come over.
No.
I'm trying to think of a bird with a bigger wingspan, or like bigger.
All right, I'll give you a little hint. They're in the entrance. They're a non-native bird, although they were native 200 years ago, but they're two that they brought in to the entrance.
Is it like a stork? No.
No, you don't remember, do you?
Brought into the entrance?
Yeah, brought into the... There's a pond at the entrance to when you walk out.
I haven't been to the wetland centre in about 15 years.
Dalmatian pelicans.
Oh, I was never getting that.
Oh, were you not?
No.
I thought you knew that one.
No, we'd never.
You obviously didn't know that.
I did not know that.
Anyway, they're incredible birds. They've got 3.2-metre wingspan.
Because even, I was thinking, like, the big, tall birds being our egrets and herons, they don't have wings that big, and so it was
You know what? It's a bird of... You know the bird that's got the long...
The albatross.
Yeah, the albatross, yeah. And the bird of prey that's got the...
It's one of the big soaring...
Is the Andean condor.
Yeah.
That's got the largest wingspan.
Which I think we've got a little shout-out in one of our positive stories.
Also, which I've really liked, it weighs up to 15 kilos.
God, that's a chunky bird.
It's a chunky bird.
I'll tell you what, on weight then, I'm going to throw you another question. True or false? The Goliath beetle is heavier than a mouse.
I think that's true.
It is true. It can weigh over 100 grams.
Mice are quite, yeah.
That's a chunky beetle.
Wow, that is a chunky beetle.
It's one of the heaviest beetles in the world. Right. Cool. Did we, because I have no idea how long we've been chatting for.
Well, 52 minutes now.
Should we talk a little bit, and this isn't necessarily a particularly long section, but a little bit about our love for the podcast and absolute blue sky thinking guests?
Yeah, can we do that? Can I just do one more thing? Because I have to mention this. You know that, have you heard of the lyre bird?
It's L-Y-R. Yeah, they're one of the best mimics, aren't they?
Oh, you have got to. If you haven't seen them before, and I just came across this lyre bird, when they're courting, the males will attract the female on the basis of how many different sounds.
Yeah, because they'll do things like chainsaws and everything.
Oh, you've got to hear, and camera shutters.
Yeah.
And actually, David Attenborough's BBC Earth video, he highlighted it, and it did this camera shutter with a motor drive.
I've
got to go and find that because it's absolutely hilarious. And there was one that is particularly funny. Taronga Zoo in Australia, they had an emergency and five lions escaped apparently. So they did this alarm and they did a message over this tannoy. And when they got these lions back and all settled down, this lyre bird imitated the alarm absolutely perfectly. Yeah, and then it said, because this was what they were saying over the tannoy, evacuate now, evacuate now. And you've got to hear it. This bird is absolutely astonishing.
I think they're one of the best mimics
chainsaw
in the world.
Sound is just off the scale. And it also mimics a kookaburra and brilliant. You've got to check out lyre birds because...
We'll stick a link in the
It just made me laugh.
They are incredible.
Anyway, so that was just a little thing that I want people to go and see because they'll love it. And they won't believe it, actually, just how incredible they are. Anyway, so yeah, let's...
So, we've mentioned before, you know, we're not a 1.2 million a year earning podcast. And again, we've probably not been as diligent as we should have done with promoting the podcast because we've been busy with stuff. But the reason why we still do it, apart from the fact that people listen, and we've had very lovely comments from those people who do. And if you are listening,
I think we've had something
over
like
5,000.
Nearly 6,000 downloads from all of the episodes.
Yeah. But the biggest reason that we do it is just because we absolutely love it. I mean, I don't really know where to start beyond saying that for my whole life, I feel like I've been chatting about wildlife and nature. I very rarely shut up in real life, let alone with a microphone on me. But from another point of view, I always find that sitting down and researching each episode for me is a nice excuse to learn about a random animal, a random habitat, some of the good work that's going on. It keeps me sort of up to date on some of the wildlife news, but it's actually really nice just to sit down and it's a good excuse to sit down and just read and learn about wildlife.
Yeah, I think that's definitely been a big eye opener, actually, is just how much I've enjoyed doing the research and how much I've learned. Because we've done such a variety of subjects, haven't we?
Yeah.
And it does. It makes you learn stuff. And yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant. But the other heartwarming thing that's come out of every single episode we've done, we've highlighted the amazing work that people, and it's not just the RSPB, although they're a really big player in trying to protect the biodiversity across the world. But it's just all of those unsung heroes that you never read about in the newspapers, you never see unless you're sort of actively involved in the organisations. You never see all this incredible work that's going on trying to protect everything from habitat to wildlife, to waterways, to our beaches, our seas, our coastlines. It's just incredible.
It's also been really fun to find, participate in some and highlight the like citizen science opportunities I had no idea about. Yeah. I always knew about, you know, the big garden bird count, the big butterfly count, but there's been all sorts of things that we've mentioned that we had no idea was out there and then you can get involved in. And again, it's our way or a way to feel like you're contributing something. The thing I wrote down was the fact that even if it's a very small impact, whether it's through sharing that bit of hope, because quite often all we see is the bad stuff, and hopefully we can give people a little bit of hope about, you know, how many people out there are fighting so hard for nature and specific animals, or help people make a slightly eco-friendly swap, because we've done a few eco sort of episodes on gardening and tea and coffee, or even literally just spark a little bit of interest. Maybe people weren't that fussed about, you know, raft spiders in the UK, and then suddenly like, we've got this incredible spider in the UK. Then it's amazing that we, even if it's a small impact, if we can have that impact. If it is literally just somebody drinking a cup of coffee going, I didn't know about raft spiders. They're really cool. I had no idea we had a fast beetle in the UK. And it's just, if that's all it is somebody having a slightly increased level of interest in our wildlife or our nature, then that makes it worth it.
Yeah, and from my point of view, I'd love it if people thought, do you know what, I'll go and do a bit of volunteering, or I'll go and do a little survey.
Or visit my local RSPB.
And it's honestly, if you do it, it's heartwarming, and you will come away thinking, do you know what, I'm making a little bit of difference, however small it might be. And again, for me, from my point of view as a dad, it's just an absolute joy to sit here with my boy chatting away. We've always done it. But
now I'm nearly 30.
Now you're nearly 30, and I won't even tell you my age. And we watched the tennis yesterday when Novak Djokovic got absolutely battered by Jannik Sinner. And he finally admitted in the press conference that, age is catching up a bit and the body's a bit of wear and tear. I have to say this morning, I felt a bit like Novak because I got a bit battered by my boy on a tennis court. But of course, I'm 63, so I've got a big excuse.
Yeah. You still serve a lot better than I do.
But in all seriousness, it's an absolute joy to sit and chat with you, Matt. It always has been, it always will be. And it's something that we just look forward to doing, don't we?
Yeah, it's always
I don't know
lovely.
Whether we do it particularly well. We do it because we enjoy it. And I have actually bought some fancy recording gear over the couple of years.
Yeah, but that's there's no way that wasn't going to happen, because you always like to have good bit of kit.
But it's just a joy. So
yeah, it's always good fun.
And we hope you enjoy listening as well to us waffling away. As far as guests concerned, I've got quite a few, actually.
I've got a couple. I didn't write down a few because I knew you would have
some. Some of them are sort of the obvious ones. It would be incredible to have Chris Packham here, because I just think he's the most incredible campaigner.
He's one of the most engaged public figures when it comes to wildlife and nature.
You know, he's admitted himself that he gets eco anxiety, and he feels like he's been campaigning and campaigning non-stop for, I don't know, 20-30 years, and we're still encountering the same problems, and some cases
worse. I would always have, some cases worse. I always think, and I think this when people, you know, talk about working in the environment sector or the efforts where it feels like we've been fighting to save, I don't know, our heathlands for a long time, or conserve, or even things like protect the tigers for a long time. And people are like, have you made a difference? I always think the other key question is, would it be worse if you didn't have people campaigning for it?
Yeah.
So if you didn't have people like Chris Packham, and then obviously the thousands of people who are backing his campaigns and helping, shouting about it, if everybody just did nothing, undoubtedly it would be worse, because the issues wouldn't be front center, which means the people and the industries responsible for causing damage would have nothing to hold them accountable. At least even if it just slows it down, I always have to think that, yes, it doesn't always feel like you're winning, but it would be worse if no one was doing it.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good point. And I think it's the same with everything, isn't it? That, you know, we think as one person, we can't make a difference, but the more and more people that get together to you know, campaign and work hard, then it does make a difference. I've got other... Shall I work through mine and then you work through yours?
Yeah, I think we'll have a couple of the same.
I've got... I'm hugely respectful of Roy Dennis. Roy Dennis was a man who's spent most of his life doing reintroductions into back into the UK. Birds like the white-tailed eagle, he was instrumental in that. The red kite, ospreys, incredibly passionate.
That'd be a really interesting conversation.
Amazing man, absolutely amazing man. And again, just one of those unsung heroes, so modest, but has dedicated his whole life to doing that. I thought Ricky Gervais would be a great one. We're fellow vegans and he's bound to say something controversial or thought-provoking about animal welfare and politicians. So I thought, Ricky Gervais, I'd love to have you. Ricky, get on here, mate.
I'd just love to meet him.
Yeah, I think he'd be great on the podcast. I'm, again, massive fan of Dr. Jane Goodall.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a whole episode on her.
Episode on her. And she's 91 and she's still travelling around the world educating young people about conservation and trying to make the world a better place. She's educating youngsters, which is the key. And she's 91. She's a most amazing lady. Huge respect. Mary Colwell, Curlew Action.
Yeah.
She spent her whole life trying to save the curlew. Incredible lady. I'd love to have her. We talked about that in the past. Hopefully, there's a chance we'll get Mary Colwell on here one day. Mary, if you're listening, give me a buzz. You've got my number. I thought David Gray would be great. We saw him. He's another big curlew fan. Obviously, he's a musician. I thought you'd do some good acoustic tracks for us while we're here. And Yolo Williams, and I've put down here,
yes,
because your mum loves him and we really enjoy giving him lunch.
Oh, I know that you obviously bumped into him.
Oh, he's a lovely man.
Another person who came and gave a talk at the Bangor Zoology Society. It was a combined event from a lot of the wildlife enthusiasts and just lovely.
Just a lovely man.
Lovely,
and of course,
lovely man.
He's worked for the RSPB in the past, and his knowledge and his enthusiasm and his passion.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he can be a little bit outspoken on X.
He's great
on
to
X
listen
as well.
To, though.
And, is it X? Twitter?
Oh, yeah, it's always Twitter for me.
Twitter. But also your mum loves Yolo.
Wants to make him lunch.
Yeah, wants to make him lunch. So, Yolo, if you fancy lunch in West Sussex, come and get on the pod. We'd love to have you here. And, of course, first and foremost, your mate Sean.
Yeah, come on, Sean.
His knowledge is absolutely off the scale.
His knowledge of bird calls and bird ID is phenomenal.
Off the scale,
A little bit, obviously, on what you touched on at the beginning of the episode, if you want to learn about sort of dinosaurs and the evolution of birds and that side of things, then he really is your man for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, I was hoping Sean might be able to expand on that bit I touched on earlier on in a very brief way. Yeah. Sean will give us the whole...
It's funny because I know that he occasionally listens to these episodes and he always says that each time we mention his name, it really throws him off, because he might just be chilling and then suddenly his name gets appeared. And he's had a few this time. So if I've made you jump a couple of times, then that always makes me laugh knowing that that's
So that's pretty much my list, actually.
I had people like Steve Batchel, again, just somebody
one of your
who
heroes
so
when you were a kid.
Influential when I was a kid. George McGavin, who I did have as a potential moment because about 12, again, another person who I grew up watching in documentaries. He was always, you know, the scientist amongst all the explorers.
They'd be out in Borneo and he'd be scrabbling around in the undergrowth finding scorpions and goodness knows what.
He like crawled through a hollowed out fallen tree trunk which was just covered in like whipped scorpions and things like that. And I just thought, what a legend. And I actually emailed him as a kid, asked him for an identification on an insect, and he got back to me. And I emailed him when I was trying to decide between certain degrees. And again, he replied to me and I had his book and...
People that found the time to actually reply.
Well, I had a little wobble in my A-levels where I nearly changed my whole interest from animals and went and did a chemistry degree instead. I actually sent him an email. I'm not sure why. I thought he was, because it was my interest was always insects. And he sent me like 2 pages worth of advice from somebody who'd obviously gone through all of academia to the point of PhD level and stuff. And it was really well thought out, personalized advice, and it wasn't just like a PA response or something like that. And I just thought, oh, that was just lovely to get that from him. I also have Dr. Erica McAllister, who is a researcher, and she specializes in flies. Again, another person who I have met, she came and gave a talk at our Entomology Society, signed my book. But she has a really, really cool book. I'm pretty sure it's called For the Love of Flies? The Secret World of Flies. That's what it's called. And I would recommend it to anyone because it's not like a heavy sciencey read, but it just shows you how important flies are to our world. And she's done all sorts of things, from being part of like forensic teams looking at flies and maggots in corpses to everything, to, again, these exploration documentaries, and her knowledge of and passion for a group of animals that are so often hated.
Yeah.
She's just an absolute legend. So that would be very cool. And then I had similar people like Chris Packham and David Attenborough. That'd be fine again.
Well, I say I tried to chauffeur him in. I did offer a chauffeur-driven roller, but he was busy.
Yeah. I think it'd be quite funny if we could have Chris Packham and Megan McCubbin in
as well. They'd be great.
They're a really good duo, aren't they?
And Megan McCubbin's just a joy to listen to.
Yeah,
she's great.
A lot of the sort of people and presenters I think that formed or so instrumental in me forming a passion for wildlife and conservation.
I'm a big fan of Steve Baxley. He's great.
Yeah, and again,
I watched an amazing program that he did about trying to save these snow leopards. It wasn't Russia, but it was out in that part of the world. And there was plans to do this big steel company and absolutely destroy the environment where these snow leopards were supposedly, and they spent this amazing time trying to prove that the population was strong enough that they couldn't do this.
Yeah.
And he was just so, but
again,
so passionate.
He's obviously, shows like Deadly 60, I think, inspired a whole generation of kids to be excited about wildlife. But he's always been another one for promoting the animals that are often not always got a great reputation.
So good to
snakes,
listen to as well.
Spiders, sharks, the things that often pose a threat. Yeah. He's always been there to show that actually, if we leave them alone and don't get in their space, they're really not that much of a threat, and look how incredible they are. And so, again, it's that sort of showing appreciation for perhaps the less loved animals.
Yeah. He's also absolutely jacked.
Yeah, he's a big judo practitioner as well, so, and rock climber. But another that would be very cool.
Yeah, big fan.
Lots of the people who have either been very science driven in my life or just sort of an inspiration would be really interesting to talk to.
Well, you never know, mate. One day.
Right, just before we completely wrap up, I thought, did you have a quiz question, something to do with, or was that the Dalmatian pelican that came from you?
I've got a few here.
Do you want to rattle a couple off and then we'll close up the episode?
I won't do the air horn
every time.
So what bird I photograph is scheduled to be my next tattoo?
Oh, I know this. That is a Dartford warbler, isn't it?
It's not the one, the immediate one.
Oh, is it not?
No.
Wait, what have you got? You've got your kestrel, your whitetail, and your curlew. It's going there.
I thought you knew. It relates to one of those moments I had.
It's not your kingfisher.
Yeah, it was a kingfisher.
Oh, it is a kingfisher. Yeah.
But Dartford warbler. Mum and I were going to do a joint Dartford warbler. What bird painting have I got that was personally painted for me in oils by David Shepherd?
That is a curlew.
No.
The bird. Oh, it's an eagle.
Close.
It's a bird of prey.
It's if a vulture is a bird of prey, then it's a vulture.
Oh, it's niche.
Yeah, it's a vulture.
Oh, I thought it was an eagle.
And what other ones have you done? What flock of 50-plus birds did I see at WWT Welney that was a rare sighting and caused such excitement? And they came down like little parachutists. Do you remember?
No, I don't remember that either.
Cranes. We saw cranes.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have got that one. I was thinking of in the wasn't Welney, your other, was it Arne? Where you sent me a message saying I've never seen so many curlews in my whole life.
Oh, yeah, no, that was at Arne.
Yeah, that's, and then I was like, couldn't be another curlew question.
So I'm a ranger at RSPB Pagham Harbour and do a bird count of an overwintering bird that arrives there in huge numbers. Name that bird.
Oh, Brent Geese.
Yes, Brent Geese.
Oh, I finally got one.
What bird has a call that sounds like your wife's name?
Oh, a golden oriole.
Yes, and we called it the Louise bird, didn't we? Because it literally made this sound of going, Louise?
Yeah, that was when we were in Croatia.
Louise? It was brilliant, wasn't it? We called it a Louise bird. What else have I got? What bird photo of mine is tattooed on your mum's shoulder, and what name did I give him?
It's a robin, and it's called... Oh, I'm really upset that I've forgotten this.
You know it.
He's gone. No, hang on. Why can't I remember the Robin's name?
It's
can't
called remember. Archie.
Oh, that wasn't coming to me. I should have known. I could not. Yeah.
I'll rattle off a few more insect ones. How many body sections do insects
have? Three, abdomen, thorax, and the head.
What is the name for the opening on the abdomen and thorax of an insect through which oxygen passes in and carbon passes out?
Spiracle.
Yes, you've got spiracles. Dragonflies and damselflies belong to the order Odonata.
Odonata.
Odonata. What does the name Odonata mean?
Oh, it's. I should know this one.
Well, of course you should.
Is it something to do with like teeth and predatory? It's
yes,
yeah, because
yeah, you're nearly there.
Yeah, it's something to do with teeth.
And it is.
It's not terrible tooth.
No,
it's sharp tooth.
No, it's toothed.
Tooth
jaw.
Tooth jaw. Yeah, I knew it was tooth because of odonate. Sounds like dentist.
Okay, I think that might be the end of my.
Please, I remembered spiracles. Questions.
I did have some fun facts, but I think we are running a bit.
My only very quick fun fact was that bumblebees play. Ball rolling by bumblebees fulfills the criteria for animal play. Acts as unconditioned, rewarding stimulus. Younger bees roll more balls and males
roll. So they
roll,
play ball.
So they actually play for fun.
Fantastic. Crows hold funerals.
Oh,
did you know
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I did know that.
That mourning is not well understood in the animal kingdom, but a crow funeral is much like a human. The
birds
will gather around a fallen crow. It's actually, and call to each other and pay close attention to their fallen peer. They do it because they're trying to work out the threat that's
they hold grudges as well.
They do hold grudges.
Right, shall we?
I just wanted to do, I don't know whether I ought to do that one. I was going to put, there's quite a funny one. Is it funny? I thought that was quite funny that male birds don't have penises, but I won't go into that. I was going to do this. Prince Andrew has something in common with birds. Birds don't sweat.
Oh.
They don't have sweat glands.
Yeah, that's quite funny.
So I don't know whether I should leave that in.
Well, you're editing. That's your call.
Anyway,
we will wrap up there. That was some random little facts at the end and some quiz questions. Scarily got most of the ones about you. Right, you're going to cut that. Stop it.
That's the end of our 50th episode.
Take those buttons off you. I will make you edit out those factions. Scarily, I got most of the questions about you and Mum wrong, but thankfully I got most of the insect ones right.
Yes,
so
you did.
It turns
well,
out
that's probably.
Remember my degree. Don't know my family. So it's a very chatty episode, but hopefully you've enjoyed a little bit of a tour of our interest in birds and bugs, some of the reasons we love podcasting. Who we'd love to get in an absolute ideal world.
Well, now they will have all heard it, obviously. So they'll probably be ringing us up on Monday.
I might actually have to put Do Not Disturb on my phone. Yeah. I'm so busy. Yeah. But to everybody who has listened to any of our episodes, thank you for finding our little like corner of the internet where we talk about our interest in nature. We'll have more episodes coming soon. Find us on Instagram at TheBirdieBugPod. Send us a message. Why do you love birds? Why do you love bugs? What got you interested in wildlife and nature? We would absolutely love to know.
Yeah, and if you have got to the end of this episode, thank you.
Yeah, and
we know it's been a bit waffly.
Yeah.
But
if you haven't heard any klaxons throughout the entire episode, you know that I shot Dad. So thanks for listening. We'll catch you next
Matt,
time.
It's been an absolute joy.
Here's to the next 50.
Yes, here's for the next 50, and we will get back onto some proper subjects
next time.
Next time. So thanks very much for listening, and see you soon.